Chapter 15. That will do, that will do. He turned impressively to Wyand. Do you see the pomegranate bud in this rug? Plus yourself there, keep your left foot on it, please. And now, Sibylla, draw the cord. Miss Lombard advanced and placed her hand on a cord hidden behind the velvet curtain. Ah, said the doctor, one moment. I should like you, while looking at the picture, to have in mind a few lines of verse. Sibylla, without the slightest change of countenance, and with a promptness which proved her to be prepared for the request, Miss Lombard began to recite, in a full round voice like her mother's, St. Bernard's Invocation to the Virgin, in the 33rd canto of the Paradise. Thank you, my dear, said her father, drawing a deep breath as she ended. That unapproachable combination of vowel sounds prepares one better than anything I know for the contemplation of the picture. As he spoke, the folds of velvet slowly parted, and the Leonardo appeared in its frame of tarnished gold. From the nature of Miss Lombard's recitation, Wyant had expected a sacred subject, and his surprise was therefore great as the composition was gradually revealed by the widening division of the curtain. In the background, a steel-colored river wound through a pale calcareous landscape, while to the left, on a lonely peak, a crucified Christ hung livid against indigo clouds. The central figure of the foreground, however, was that of a woman seated in an antique chair of marble with bas-reliefs of dancing Maenads. Her feet rested on a meadow sprinkled with minute wild flowers, and her attitude of smiling majesty recalled that of Dusso Dussi Circe. She wore a red robe, flowing in closely fluted lines from under a fancifully embroidered cloak. Above her high forehead the crinkled golden hair flowed sideways beneath a veil. One hand drooped on the arm of her chair, the other held up an inverted human skull, into which a young Dionysus, smooth, brown and sidelong as the St. John of the Louvre, poured a stream of wine from a high-poised flagon. At the lady's feet lay the symbols of art and luxury. A flute and a roll of music, a platter heaped with grapes and roses, the torso of a Greek statuette, and a bowl overflowing with coins and jewels. Behind her, on the chalky hilltop, hung the crucified Christ. A scroll in a corner of the foreground bore the legend, Lux Mundi. Wyand, emerging from the first plunge of wonder, turned inquiringly toward his companions. Neither had moved. Miss Lombard stood with her hand on the cord, her lids lowered, her mouth drooping. The doctor, his strange thought-like profile turned toward his guest, was still lost in rapt contemplation of his treasure. Wyand addressed the young girl. You are fortunate, he said, to be the possessor of anything so perfect. It is considered very beautiful, she said coldly. Beautiful, beautiful, the doctor burst out. H, the poor, worn out, overworked word. There are no adjectives in the language fresh enough to describe such pristine brilliance. I, all their brightness has been worn off by misuse. Think of the things that have been called beautiful, and then look at that. It is worthy of a new vocabulary, Wyand agreed. Yes, Dr. Lombard continued, my daughter is indeed fortunate. As he has chosen what Catholics call the higher life, the Council of Perfection. What other private person enjoys the same opportunity of understanding the Master? Who else lives under the same roof with an untouched masterpiece of Leonardo's? Think of the happiness of being always under the influence of such a creation, of living into it, of partaking of it in daily and hourly communion. This room is a chapel, the sight of that picture is a sacrament. What an atmosphere for a young life to unfold itself in. My daughter is singularly blessed. Sibylla, point out some of the details to Mr. Wyand. I see that he will appreciate them. The girl turned her dense blue eyes toward Wyand. Then, glancing away from him, she pointed to the canvas. Notice the modeling of the left hand, she began in a monotonous voice. It recalls the hand of the Mona Lisa. The head of the naked genius will remind you of that of the St. John of the Louvre, but it is more purely pagan, and is turned a little less to the right. The embroidery on the cloak is symbolic. You will see that the roots of this plant have burst through the vase. This recalls the famous definition of Hamlet's character in Wilhelm Meister. Here are the mystic rose, the flame, and the serpent, emblem of eternity. Some of the other symbols we have not yet been able to decipher. Wyatt watched her curiously. She seemed to be reciting a lesson. And the picture itself? He said. How do you explain that? Lux Mundi, what a curious device, to connect with such a subject. What can it mean? Miss Lombard dropped her eyes. The answer was evidently not included in her lesson. What, indeed, the doctor interposed. What does life mean? As one may define it in 100 different ways, so one may find 100 different meanings in this picture. Its symbolism is as many faceted as a well-cut diamond. Who, for instance, is that divine lady? Is it she who is the true Lux Mundi, the light reflected from jewels and young eyes, from polished marble and clear waters and statues of bronze? Or is it the light of the world, extinguished on yonder stormy hill, and is this lady the pride of life, feasting blindly on the wine of iniquity, with her back turned to the light which has shone for her in vain? Something of both these meanings may be traced in the picture. But to me, it symbolizes rather the central truth of existence. That all that is raised in incorruption is sown in corruption. Art, beauty, love, religion. That all our wine is drunk out of skulls, and poured for us by the mysterious genius of a remote and cruel past. The doctor's face blazed. His bent figure seemed to straighten itself and become taller. Ah, he cried, growing more dithyrambic, how lightly you ask what it means. How confidently you expect an answer. Yet here am I who have given my life to the study of the Renaissance, who have violated its tomb, laid open its dead body, and traced the course of every muscle, bone, and artery, who have sucked its very soul from the pages of poets and humanists, who have wept and believed with Joachim of Flora, smiled and doubted with Aeneas Silvius Piccolomini, who have patiently followed to its source the least inspiration of the masters, and groped in Neolithic caverns and Babylonian ruins for the first unfolding tendrils of the arabesques of Mantegna and Crivelli. And I tell you, that I stand abashed and ignorant before the mystery of this picture. It means nothing, it means all things. It may represent the period which saw its creation. It may represent all ages past and to come. There are volumes of meaning in the tiniest emblem on the lady's cloak. The blossoms of its border are rooted in the deepest soil of myth and tradition. Don't ask what it means, young man, but bow your head in thankfulness for having seen it. Miss Lombard laid her hand on his arm. Don't excite yourself, Father, she said in the detached tone of a professional nurse. He answered with a despairing gesture. H, it's easy for you to talk. You have years and years to spend with it. I am an old man, and every moment counts. It's bad for you, she repeated with gentle obstinacy. The doctor's sacred fury had in fact burned itself out. He dropped into a seat with dull eyes and slackening lips, and his daughter drew the curtain across the picture. Wyatt turned away reluctantly. He felt that his opportunity was slipping from him, yet he dared not refer to Clyde's wish for a photograph. He now understood the meaning of the laugh with which Dr. Lombard had given him leave to carry away all the details he could remember. The picture was so dazzling, so unexpected, so crossed with elusive and contradictory suggestions, that the most alert observer, when placed suddenly before it, must lose his coordinating faculty in a sense of confused wonder. Yet how valuable to Clyde the record of such a work would be. In some ways it seemed to be the summing up of the master's thought, the key to his enigmatic philosophy. The doctor had risen, and was walking slowly toward the door. His daughter unlocked it, and Wyatt followed them back in silence to the room in which they had left Mrs. Lombard. That lady was no longer there, and he could think of no excuse for lingering. He thanked the doctor, and turned to Miss Lombard, who stood in the middle of the room, as though awaiting farther orders. It is very good of you, he said, to allow one even a glimpse of such a treasure. She looked at him with her odd directness. Who will come again? She said quickly, and turning to her father she added, you know what Professor Clyde asked? This gentleman cannot give him any account of the picture without seeing it again. Dr. Lombard glanced at her vaguely. He was still like a person in a trance. Eh? He said, rousing himself with an effort. I said, Father, that Mr. Wyand must see the picture again, if he is to tell Professor Clyde about it, Miss Lombard repeated with extraordinary precision of tone. Wyand was silent. He had the puzzled sense that his wishes were being divined and gratified for reasons with which he was in no way connected. Well, well, the doctor muttered, I don't say no, I don't say no. I know what Clyde wants, I don't refuse to help him. He turned to Wyand. Who may come again, you may make notes, he added with a sudden effort. Jot down what occurs to you. I'm willing to concede that. Wyand again caught the girl's eye, but its emphatic message perplexed him. You're very good, he said tentatively, but the fact is the picture is so mysterious, so full of complicated detail, that I'm afraid no notes I could make would serve Clyde's purpose as well as a photograph, say. If you would allow me, Miss Lombard's brow darkened, and her father raised his head furiously. A photograph? A photograph, did you say? Good God, man, not 10 people have been allowed to set foot in that room. A photograph? Wyand saw his mistake, but saw also that he had gone too far to retreat. I know, sir, from what Clyde has told me, that you object to having any reproduction of the picture published, but he hoped you might let me take a photograph for his personal use, not to be reproduced in his book, but simply to give him something to work by. I should take the photograph myself, and the negative would of course be yours. If you wished it, only one impression would be struck off, and that one Clyde could return to you when he had done with it. Dr. Lombard interrupted him with a snarl. And he had done with it? Just so. I thank thee for that word. When it had been re-photographed, drawn, traced, autotyped, passed about from hand to hand, defiled by every ignorant eye in England, vulgarized by the blundering praise of every art scribbler in Europe. Bah! I'd as soon give you the picture itself. Why don't you ask for that? Well, sir, said Wyand calmly, if you will trust me with it, I'll engage to take it safely to England and back, and to let no eye but Clyde see it while it is out of your keeping. The doctor received this remarkable proposal in silence. Then he burst into a laugh. Upon my soul, he said with sardonic good humor. It was Miss Lombard's turn to look perplexedly at Wyand. His last words and her father's unexpected reply had evidently carried her beyond her depth. Well, sir, am I to take the picture? Wyand smilingly pursued. No, young man, nor a photograph of it. Nor a sketch either. Mind that, nothing that can be reproduced. Sibylla, he cried with sudden passion, swear to me that the picture shall never be reproduced. No photograph, no sketch now or afterward. Do you hear me? Yes, father, said the girl quietly. The vandals, he muttered, the desecrators of beauty, if I thought it would ever get into their hands I'd burn it first, by God. He turned to Wyand, speaking more quietly. Said you might come back, I never retract what I say. But you must give me your word that no one but Clyde shall see the notes you make. Wyand was growing warm. If you won't trust me with a photograph, I wonder you trust me not to show my notes, he exclaimed. The doctor looked at him with a malicious smile. Humph, he said. Would they be of much use to anybody? Wyand saw that he was losing ground, and controlled his impatience. To Clyde, I hope, at any rate, he answered, holding out his hand. The doctor shook it without a trace of resentment, and Wyand added, when shall I come, sir? Tomorrow, tomorrow morning, cried Miss Lombard, speaking suddenly. She looked fixedly at her father, and he shrugged his shoulders. The picture is hers, he said to Wyand. In the antechamber, the young man was met by the woman who had admitted him. She handed him his hat and stick, and turned to unbar the door. As the bolt slipped back, he felt a touch on his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.